Welcome to Life Lab, hosted by David Ponder and Zach Schaefer, where we inspire listeners to live the good life through organic conversations about evergreen topics.
Life Lab captures our belief in personal evolution and a growth mindset. So,
experiment with life.
So the other day, I was watching our kids run around and play at a place called Urban Air. It's one of those crazy indoor playground places where they have they have some cool stuff. They've got like an indoor zip line and a ropes course and some other
trampolines.
Yeah, lots of trampolines everywhere. And gosh, they were having the best time. Like, you know, if you ask them on a scale of 1 to 10 how great it was, they'd say a 10. And I was watching them do the stuff, and, you know, some of it looks interesting. Like, I wouldn't mind trying that indoor zip line, right? Most of it, though, I could do without. Been there, done that. It doesn't entertain me. And I was thinking, you know, it's interesting how over the course of one's life, you change in that way. The things that you find novel and entertaining. And so everybody knows, that's what we're talking about today. Entertainment.
Entertainment. I had the exact same thing occur. We went to a baseball game. We had our kids, and we let them bring friends. I have zero, like, it was not fun for me. It was just, even, and I, like, watching the kids and seeing they were having fun, and we were in the bleachers, and they got to go down in between innings and try to get the guys to throw them the balls. Like, that was cool, and I was still trying to get joy from that part of it. But other than that, just looking around, like, I felt like Daniel Day-Lewis from There Will Be Blood when he's like, these people.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's just terrible. Yeah, I'm done. That's done being a consumer of sports, brother. It's just, I have zero entertainment from that.
Oh, that's interesting. And that's very different than the way that we grew up. Oh, I remember coming to your house and like watching Bulls games, and
it was awesome.
Your dad having a Chiefs sticker on the van.
Yeah,
sports was a big part of our life growing up. Mm-hmm.
Well, sports still is, but my kids playing versus me consuming grown men sports. I don't need that in my life anymore.
You know what? I think I'd be on the same page with you if it wasn't for the fact that my kids enjoy watching it, and I use it as a bonding experience with them. Mm-hmm. The baseball playoffs have been going on, and, you know, Lauren has an aunt and uncle who live outside of Philly. And so we've been to Philadelphia as a family, and the Phillies are in. So we're like, all right, we're going to pick them. Well, obviously the Cardinals aren't in, you know, but you got to pick a team. And so watching them on the series with Dylan and him being excited and rooting for them.
Yeah, he's a baseball nut.
It was a bonding experience. But what I'll say that's interesting about that then is they didn't make it to the World Series. They lost to the Diamondbacks. Mm. And the other team that I wanted to win was the Astros, because they used to play the Cardinals all the time when they were in the same division for the playoff races. And they lost. So it's two teams I don't care about, you know. And that to me made me think about like a couple things, like tribalism, right? Like, you got to pick your tribe, one. And two, like, when your tribe's not in it, the Cardinals aren't in it, you know, you just pick another one that you're like, you know, not even emotionally invested in. But anyway, it's interesting.
I mean, it's even in my financial interest, not for me to necessarily like those things, but just for people in general to need to be entertained by sports, owning sports bars.
Oh, yeah.
But like me personally, I just, like, even when I'm at my sports bars, the environment's awesome. But I just, like, what's actually on the screens doesn't entertain me. All that does is the conversations I have with the people that I'm with or around. That's for me the key part. What was the first thing when you saw entertainment? Like, what popped in your head?
Hi, I'm Mark Miller, owner of Miller Furniture, your home for quality American-made furniture since 1927. I'd like to expand on Life Lab's motto, which is experiment with life, and how it relates to us as a furniture company. We're currently in our 95th year in our American furniture retail experiment. Each year, we continue to tweak and optimize what we can do for you, our valued customer. And in any experiment, you must have control groups and variables. Our control groups are, first, you must be incredibly knowledgeable about your product. And this allows you to help customers make really good home furnishing choices that they'll love for many, many years. Secondly, you must provide accurate delivery expectations when the customer is in the research and purchasing phase. And third, you must address any and all customer issues after the sale. So that's the controls. If you can't do that, you're never going to be any good at furniture retail. We've been doing this 95 years, and that is a constant, those three things. Now the fun part, the variables, things that change all the time. And I think, how can I optimize my showroom and my website so that customers love it more each and every year? Well, first, we look at different vendors. So as an independent furniture store, we have over 100 different vendors. I find new ones every single year when I go to some of the exclusive furniture markets around the country. The other important thing is, these vendors, are they equipped to provide what my customers need? So do my customers want more design options, or do they want faster delivery? Because there's often a weighing of that. If a vendor offers 100 different styles, how can you possibly be producing them quick enough? You know, maybe you only want to offer 10 styles and get them to the customer in 6 weeks instead of 6 months, those kinds of decisions. Product styles, those will always vary and evolve. We know that styles are cyclical and things come back over time, and we center around classic designs with strong staying power, because when you buy a solid hickory top or solid cherry wood Amish-made table or bedroom set, most people expect that to last 20 or 30 years, so you don't want to go too trendy. But it is important to have more trendy design options so that you have some, like, right-now appeal. Other variables are in the upholstery, your living room, your fabrics, your leathers. Those things change almost seasonally, but certainly year by year, different colors become more popular than others. We see that now with warmer neutrals coming back in style, and some of the grays and grayses that were all the rage of the past 5 years are still popular, but they're not quite where they were even 12 months ago. Now, one thing that we have is Amish-made solid wood furniture that allows us to customize the finishes. So you can make the same design look completely different just by using different wood finishes and or paints and combinations of those things. So we have looks that you just won't find in the mass-produced furniture business. Most of the furniture in this country, in the United States, is imported. The wood furniture, 88.7% of the wood furniture sold in 2019 was imported, and nearly 100% of what I show in my showrooms is American-made. So we're doing things very, very different than most furniture stores you're going to find. They don't offer custom finishes on any of that mass-produced imported stuff. Plus, they're using things like Asian hardwood, rubber wood, mango, other woods that are soft and not nearly as pretty as maple or cherry or hickory, quarter sawn oak. Anyway, those are all different, the variables. The other thing is, there's design-oriented customers and there's practical use customers. So if you're going to buy a kitchen table and you want to have it and it's going to be used all the time, kids are going to do homework on it, you're going to eat breakfast and dinner there, you know, that's something you might consider doing a solid hickory top with more of a medium wood finish, because one, hickory is the hardest wood, so you're not going to dent it as often. Two, a medium to light finish is going to be more forgiving. You're not going to see all those little marks. But if you're more of a design-oriented customer and you want a sleek, dark wood with a nice, clean finish, cherry or maple is going to be the wood species, and you might do a dark finish like onyx or dark night, which has a little bit of a gray undertone. So those are all the things, and that's going to be for a more design-oriented customer. Those are all the variables that are – and there's so many more. There's an endless amount of variables in the furniture retail business. And, you know, in my brick-and-mortar operation in our three St. Louis area stores, there's one additional constraint, and that's physical size. So I am in the middle of a furniture retail experiment, and I have 48,000 square feet of usable showroom space and about the same amount of warehouse space to try to figure out what's the best mix of product for my customers. And that's the experiment that I literally do every single day and that my family's been doing for four generations. And after a while, you know, you get pretty good at that kind of stuff. So we're truly experts in our field. And with the nationwide delivery capabilities that we now have, We can bring you our amazing furniture into your home so you can enjoy it for many, many years to come, and hopefully decades as well. And that's going to be on MillerFurniture.com. That's M-U-E-L-L-E-R Furniture.com and our specific Amish furniture website called Amish Furniture Direct USA. You can also call me directly on my personal cell phone at 618-977-8716. Ask for Mark Miller, and I will be happy to have a conversation about whatever your home furnishings needs are. Thank you so much for your time, and it is an honor to sponsor Zach and Dave here on Life Lab.
Movies.
Nice.
Movies. Like, I think of the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And that's something it's interesting. It's sort of magical, sort of like unexplainable. The fact that they just founded this town, let's call it Hollywood. Let's make all our movies there. All the movie stars and everything will move there. And the way that it was, you know, like, and it's...
I don't think so. I think...
Like, when it was just starting up, you know what I mean? It's like, why? I guess I understand it now, thinking about the human condition and the fact that being around and there being an electricity in the air that sparks creativity between people and the bonding that comes with it and everything. But to me, it's like... That's not how it was before that. Like, authors lived everywhere. Books were written around the world. You know what I mean? There was no like, oh, you want to be an author? You got to move to wherever. You got to move to Dublin. That's where everybody writes the books, man. You know?
Well, there is absolutely pockets of authorship, you know, like being in a certain neighborhood in New York, Dublin specifically. Like, there's absolutely cities around the world historically where the creative writers, thinkers – have gone 100%. Well, and to me, it all just gets back to storytelling.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are places that are known to be inspirational places. Right?
Yeah. But to the level, I agree with you, of that Hollywood has created, but then they also market that.
Right.
So
they do. Yeah. It's become a self-fulfilling prophecy, I suppose.
When I heard entertainment, the first thing I thought is I'm their product. They're selling me to sit and drool and to consume, to be a consumer rather than a producer. And that's why I'm a bit like Musk is, Elon Musk, where if I'm not trying to keep, like, do a 38 special, hold on loosely. So even when I'm watching something, a show or a movie, obviously reading books is very entertaining to me. I read a lot. But the books probably wouldn't entertain others, but I'm always thinking, like, how can I use this? Like, what can I do with it? And if I lose that connection to me feeling productive, then I get down on myself and depressed. So, like, probably that's a big reason why, like, going to a baseball game, and my kids aren't into it like Dave's are, it's just a total waste of time for me.
Don't you think that's a part of our just this phase of life? Do you think you'll be in that for the rest of your life? You'll always be that way?
Yeah, man. I can enjoy the moment certain times as long as I'm like keeping an edge. There's an edge somewhere, like, okay, don't just be totally consumed. Like when I go on vacation, I enjoy it. I'm in the moment. I'm being entertained. I'm allowing the resort to do its thing. But then I'm also, it's the warm shower. My most creative business ideas always come on plane rides to and from vacations. Because I'm relaxed. I'm not like super focused on stuff, but I'm open. I've got a notebook. I'm jotting ideas down. And then when I get back, I'm like, shit, this was a good idea.
Yeah.
So it's like a distraction from the grind of daily operations that allows me to reconnect with certain parts of my brain, but not like in a super focused, okay, let's come up with the new strategy. Let's come up with the new service offering.
It's an inspiration.
Yeah.
I think that we need more of those times in our life. You know what I mean? Like, especially as working class Americans is like, oh, you take a vacation a year or maybe two, you know? And even the other times I travel, it's work travel. It is not inspired. There is no release of stress. You know what I mean? You're not, I don't know about you. I'm not going to speak for you. But I get ideas on ways to and from work trips, but they're work ideas. They're not my best ideas. And I'm not having, like, you know, joyful emotions when having them. I'm having, okay, this is a good idea. We need to do this. here's a mountain more of work that I just created.
How am I going to achieve that? I don't want to act like I'm crying on the plane, hugging the person. But like, I came up with my business name, my business logo, like different services I've offered. Many of them are on the way and coming from vacations or like when I'm on vacation. But I'm not doing deep dives. Like, to me, entertainment is a opportunity to pause from the grind of life to embrace stories, really. Emotions.
Yeah. It is all about emotions.
Yeah, it's all emotions.
And when you think about stories and books part of entertainment, it's all about storytelling. And obviously, stories are so important. But you kind of hit on something which I didn't think about. But like, how much of a vacation is entertainment?
I mean, I just finished that Musk book. Like, he can't enjoy 5 minutes. He hates vacations. He actually has a phrase that vacations try to kill me, because like, he had a couple examples where he got super sick and almost died when he went to go on vacation, or he went back home and some horrible stuff happened in South Africa. So now he's just adopted the vacations try to kill me, I hate vacations, and looks down on people that
like vacations
like that. So like, I can appreciate a little of how he feels, but not to that degree, because I just feel like I know I get down when a vacation's too long. Like, there's a moment when it's just like, okay, this I'm ready to get back to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I know the feeling that you're talking about, and it just feels so far away right now. I think I need a vacation right now.
10 days is good for me. Like, I'm good. I'm in an okay spot right now. Because, again, my schedule's a little different than yours. Like, once Halloween hits, dude, Halloween through the end of the year for me is just an amazing time. My clients ramp down. I'm usually not traveling. Like, I love the holidays. That's huge entertainment, and we can talk about that. It's a really entertaining part of the year for me, getting to see people. And my schedule just slows down for whatever reason.
That's nice.
Dude, it's almost like I'm still an academic, like getting winter break and things like that. I mean, to that degree, it's just like things really. And I'm luckily able with our cash flow to, you know, it's lumpy. It's not like I get a salary where it's the exact same thing every month. So like, we just save. And so then if stuff flows down, then we just rely on that for these few months.
That's nice. And then you get a genuine break from the stress, right?
Yeah. But the break comes from... To me, there's a difference. Our topic is called entertainment. I get joy from entertaining. Mm. So we just threw a Halloween party. Mm-hmm. We've always thrown parties. We like to host things. We like to have dinners. We like to do that. And for me, it's the conversation. It's the connection on the human side, the relationship side. That is my entertainment. And I actually, Mike Novogratz, he's a dude in the crypto space that Dave and I follow. He said something that really resonated with me. He's like, you know, when I was young, my hobby was wrestling, because he like wrestled his way through college. He's just like, but now, you know, done well, we got money. He's just like, my hobby is entertaining. He's like, we entertain. We throw parties all the time. And, you know, some of them are pretty cool, pretty themed. Like, we got money. So like, cool stuff. I'm like, man, that's what I would want to do. Not for random people and do a business, but for us, our friends, our family. Like, more elaborate, cooler, crazy parties to give kids, our kids, crazy memories. And that's what we try to do with Halloween.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. There's two elements of parties. One that I think is bullshit, one that I think is great. And the one that I think is bullshit is, like, when you think of the Hollywoods-type parties, right? Mm. Like, oh, let's make it – you got to wear something fashionable and glamorous, and you have to show off your, you know
– wealth.
Whatever. Status, what power, blah, blah, blah. But the part that you talked about is the true part, is the human connection part. And that is something where I feel like there are plenty of people who go to parties and they never have human connection, which I feel like they're just missing the point. You know what I mean? And so that's interesting. You know, we never did a definition.
Well, go ahead.
So I'm going to throw one out, just doing this one from Wikipedia. It says, entertainment's a form of activity that holds the attention and interest of an audience or gives pleasure and delight. It can be an idea or a task, but it's more likely to be one of the activities or events that have developed over thousands of years specifically for the purpose of keeping an audience's attention. And I disagree with that. I mean, I think that that's part of it. But you know what I was going to say was, when you were talking about the vacation thing, Like, for me, one of the best parts of a vacation is the exploration element. Like, especially if I get to go to a new place and see a new place and see new things, there's something about new and novel that is, as you age, you get less and less of it. And I would think then as you age, you appreciate it more and more.
If you're open to it.
If you're open to it. Yeah, that's a good point.
It's discovery. I like that. One point I wanted to go back to, where somebody like Musk or a Ray Kroc or Bezos, whoever, what the lady that invented Spanx, right, to throw a woman in there. What is it, Sarah Blakely, I think?
Yeah, I think you're right. Something Blakely.
They have found a way to be entertained within the business they've built. It keeps their attention and interest, and they love it. It's really where their passion is. And reading that Musk book and the Ray Kroc autobiography, like, they don't need to always go take vacations. They truly are entertained and entertaining themselves, at least, being in the trenches of their business. And I, right or wrong, I just like that. I identify with that concept. I don't always feel that way in my business by any means, but I just, to me, that is inspirational. Like, I'd love to be able to have a business someday where I don't need to go take vacations. Working in my business and with the people there and solving the problems that we're doing, that is entertainment for me.
I love that. That'd be cool. That's a sexy idea, and I know that
it's rare.
I know people experience that.
It's rare.
For me, in my experience, I have experienced that at work. And in my business, just very rarely and fleetingly, unfortunately.
But
I think of how great it would be. It would almost be like an ideal. So here's the deal. Like, in our life, because of whatever economics, the cost of living, whatever you want to say, you have to work. So can you imagine if how great life would be if it was you got that feeling of entertainment, of, you know, it's novel, it's driving, it's self-reinforcing from work, and you wanted to be there and do that. That's what you would choose. You don't want a vacation. You want to go to work. Right. That would be an awesome life.
That's like what my dad is.
Yeah.
And he gets it from volunteering. We haven't talked about, can volunteering and service be entertainment? Hold
Absolutely.
Your attention and keep your interest? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. To me, though, there's the key. It's all about the emotion. It's about creating a memory. That's what we did. So, like, we just threw this Halloween party. We had 45 people over last night. We have a small home. It's a very modern. We're not rich like the Ponders. We're not, like, redoing every inch of our house, so we can't do that. So we just got this little house. But we have, when it's nice, you know, we put a fire pit out front and people congregate. But it was raining, and it started to stress me out. And I love doing these parties, but I'm like, dude, where are people going to go? You know? And so it's like this, it took it from this, what was going to be a really fun thing. Cause we got all our old friends. Right. And then some of the new Edgar Road people too. And I like that intermixing of groups, but I'm like, if we're all forced to be inside literally in like 2.5 rooms, it's just going to be weird. Cause there's a lot of kids. Luckily it quit raining. My stress went down. It was really nice. It was fantastic.
Yep. There was a group outside by the fire
pit. And my form of entertaining or entertainment, I don't necessarily need to be the guy like going around emceeing the party. Like, I literally just chilled. I just sat mostly by the fire and let people in and just observed. People enjoyed themselves, got into conversation. You were in a conversation for over an hour with a guy that you don't know that well.
Yeah.
To me, that gave me joy. That was my entertainment. Like, people are connecting. That makes me feel good.
That's cool. You are a connector. That's part of your personality. Like, I've always enjoyed that about you.
But let's go into something you do, technology. Living in the meta world, putting on the goggles, the VR, sitting in the corner, cracked out, scrolling through things for days on end, playing the video games for days on, whatever it is, building our own virtual worlds from scratch. Is that entertainment for people? Is that where it's going to go? All day, if that becomes their reality, is that entertainment?
It's entertainment. I mean, it's the same thing. It's escapism. It's the same thing.
Escapism. I like that word better for what I describe.
Yeah. It's the same thing as drugs. It's altering your reality. It's just doing it through an electronic form, which I think is interesting that that's something that people seek. You know what I mean? And a lot of times that's given a negative connotation. And I don't think it always should be.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Like, you can do positive. Like Amazon, I saw they're doing a lot more of the augmented reality. Hold your phone up and we'll put this thing in your house and you can see what it would look like.
Yeah. Well, I remember as a kid I would have the dream where I'm flying a lot. And I loved it. And it was like, man, I would love to – it inspired me to be like, oh, when I grow up, I'd like to be a pilot or I'd like to, you know, whatever. That's not reality. But you know what I mean? That in real life, I do not fly. I cannot fly. But having those dreams, I would always wake up and feel like this sense of awe and wonder and look up at the sky. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's something about that.
Your point, sorry, made me think of Bill Murray from What About Flop Bob when you're like, I do not fly. I don't fly. I sail. I'm a sailor. I'm sailing. They've got him strapped to the mast on the boat.
You know what? That's so obviously we just touched on escapism as a part of it. And I would just say there's like degrees of escapism, right? So movies, you get lost in a movie. If you really get in it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There are times where you are a really good movie will suck you in and pull you in, and you won't be aware of yourself and your space and your time.
Time. Yeah. You lose time.
And I feel like I was much better as a kid at getting sucked into something. So, just for great example, when you were like, I'm at the baseball game and I'm just looking around at other people like, what are these people doing, you know? But
and that was a choice by me. That was bad. That was my fault.
But I feel like as an adult, it's harder and harder to allow the whatever of reality to melt away and to really just let yourself go and be fully
in the moment.
Yeah, enveloped by something, be it a movie or be it whatever. You know?
Yeah, with that specific point, I want to clarify, I don't like how I felt. Like, I wanted to be much more joyful. Like, I wasn't angry or anything, but I definitely wasn't as goofy, playful, joyful as I could have been, and it was a choice, and I held on to that wrong attitude in my mind, you know, without trying to share it, of course, with the kids or anybody else. But Kizzy, of course, was just like, are you all right? Like, what's up? And it's hard. Because clearly I want to give my kids those type of experiences. But luckily my kids aren't like yours and want to go do baseball type stuff all the time.
Well, it doesn't have to be baseball or even sports or whatever. I think my point is it's harder to, you know, let go and not notice the here and now for me as I've gotten older. So, for example, here's a good example. When we were kids, I think about this from time to time, especially when like – the kids will have a soccer game or something, and it's cold, and I'm out in the freezing wind, and I'm watching them, I'm paying attention, but sometimes it's miserable when it cuts to the bone, and you're sitting there shivering watching them. And I've had that a couple times over the past couple of years, and I thought, man, when did I get so weak? I used to be able to jump on a sled, and sled down this hill for 4 hours at a time in the way colder than this, way colder temperatures than this. And I would get home and only then would I realize my hands hurt so bad. My toes hurt so bad. My face is windburned. Like the whole time I was in it, I didn't realize any of that. Yeah. It was as if I wasn't cold. Even though I was, I just wasn't conscious of it. As a kid, there's something you can do where you aren't conscious of the here and now. You are fully enveloped. You are fully into something so much that you don't notice everything that's going on around you. And you can get that. You could still get that as an adult, and some adults are better than others. I've just noticed that myself. Like, it's harder for me to get that.
I agree. I'll add one caveat, in my opinion, to your story. Agree with your story.
Yeah.
But you were doing an active thing versus a passive thing.
Yeah, that's true.
So what if you were the kid and there was no sled for you, and then you had to watch other kids sled, but they were your friends and your relatives and you love them all and they're having joy, but you're watching them sled.
Okay, that's true.
That would be very different.
I was going to give another example, but it was still active, which was when we first got our computer. I remember getting so into it. I don't know what it was. Maybe a video game I was playing on it or what. But I can remember my mom, she's a caretaker. She loves taking care of people. But she would come down and she'd like set a grilled cheese next to me or something. And I'd be like, what's this? I'm not hungry. And she'd be like, you said you wanted it. And I'd be like, okay, whatever. Knowing, I didn't even realize I responded to her. I probably just said whatever to get her to go away because she was bothering me because I was so into this thing. So
what's the most entertained you've been in the last month?
Oh, man. I don't know. Let me think about that. It's funny because my like equivalent of your baseball story is I was in New Orleans and I was at a conference, and you know the evening activity was join us for, you know, a cocktail in the lobby and then a parade to the Bourbon House, you know, and it's going to be a New Orleans style parade, you know, and they had people on stilts and a band and all that stuff. And I was just like, I don't want to do any of that. I'll go to the Bourbon House because that's where the network is going to happen. So I just skipped out on the whole first part, skipped out on the parade, went directly to the Bourbon House. And they weren't letting anyone in until the parade got there. So I'm standing outside this place. And there's, you know, I wasn't the only one with that idea. There's a dozen other people.
All the alkies, man.
We're just standing outside. Well, no, because we skipped the lobby drink. Mm. No way. But
the alkies, they got the
you know, they maybe they the, took the it and then they left things, and
yeah,
came
they've
too.
Got their,
but anyway, flags. I'm standing outside of the Bourbon House on, and it's on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. And just I don't even know what to say. The chaos of Bourbon Street is going on around me. There's a guy dressed like Darth Vader playing music really loud off of, he basically had like a little wagon with a huge speaker in it. And it had lights that like shined on him and he was dancing. And it was just, it was
a spectacle.
It was a spectacle. It was not entertaining. To me, like, but, you know, there were people from other, there were people that were obviously from other countries speaking other languages that would stop and watch this guy. And he was not good at dancing. He did the same moves over and over again, but he just figured out a way to make money, I guess. And, yeah, they're like walking up and putting money in his jar and stuff. And obviously that's just one of the things that's going on that street. I don't know if anyone's ever been there, but like, and I was just sitting there watching it, and it just hits me as like those people were entertained by him. Like I don't understand how they were, but they were. You know what I mean? Like,
well, because if they were traveling, it was a totally new experience. Yeah, and something different, right?
Yeah, because they're explained. From a different country. Yeah. To me, I'm just like, oh, this dude is just
invading my space. Noise pollution. Noise, yes. Eye pollution. Visual pollution.
I just want to go into this event without having to watch Darth Vader, you know, dance to some 70s music. It was terrible. So anyway, so that was, you said, what was the most entertained I've been? That was one of my like least entertaining moments of the last month. And that one really sticks out to me, which maybe says something about being an adult. Like it's hard to remember the time that I was most entertained recently.
Mine's easy. Coaching Claudia's basketball team, even though it's very active and I'm not an entertainer. It's entertainment for me to see her team and how, where they've come over the years, and then obviously getting to be a partial part of it, leader, I guess, of it, and help coordinate their plays and all of that. But that's fun. Like in the moment, of course, I'm not thinking this is entertainment, but that's exactly what it is. Like it's fun. It's positive joy. She has positive joy. And then I also am cognizant that my other kiddo, Ben, we're at a spot where there's a bunch of courts. And so he's very independent, and he's just running around on his own, doing his own thing. It was neat. That was very neat for me. Like that's huge. And then anytime we're out in nature together as a family, like I always just love that. That's always fun for me.
So the sports thing, you said some things that are like, I was thinking like, that's a different type of entertainment than a book or a movie, but it's really not if you think about it, because all of them you can tell a story about.
Yeah.
And like some of the best movies are like sports movies, or some of the best documentaries are sports documentaries about some real thing that happened, some real team that was on some journey. They were ragtag put together. No one expected them to do anything.
Just a story.
And they overcame, right? And they ended up achieving greatness. And those are the good stories, right? We love those stories. Or on the flip side, we love the stories of
the bad guy losing.
Yeah, someone who's the Manziel one. You know what I mean? Like he's just got unbelievable God-given talent but doesn't work for it. You know, squanders it,
knowingly
pisses it away, makes it to the damn pros on talent alone. This unbelievable overcoming of odds, and then just pisses it all away. Anyway, great. That's an entertaining story.
Yes.
But like you're talking about your daughters. Here's an interesting thing is like the audience matters, right? Like I was saying this because, yeah, if you, now that you go down that road, like probably the most time I've ever been in to watching anything has been into watching one of our kids' games. And I can recently remember watching one of Marin's games where I was getting worked up because the referee was not calling it even on both sides. And I caught myself in the moment and turned to a parent in a, feeling a little bit embarrassed, you know, because I'm yelling at the referee. And I said, I never thought I'd enjoy watching 9-year-old girls soccer so much, which is, it's true. You know what
well,
I mean?
Just like, at those baseball games, like people get into those games, the kids' games, you know, everybody, that one group of parents behind us watching the 7-year-old girls, they should be in a movie together. Like the amount of entertainment and joy they're getting out of that. Now, alcohol really helps fuel that for them. They drink a lot of beers, but it's good. It's positive emotions as long as they're not getting into fist fights or dumb stuff, which they didn't. You know, they weren't, nobody was yelling at each other. I don't think that that's bad.
Here's a question. Do you think there's ever been an audience for like, so that's competition, right? And we're watching competition and it's totally interesting to us. Like, so there's something about humanity. There's something about humans. We love storytelling, right? So there's the storytelling aspect of that. We love competition, win, loss, you know, the element to get back to stoicism of what's in your control, what's not in your control. We love the idea of overcoming adversity, beating the odds. Yeah. You know, I'll cheer for underdogs in sporting events or whatever competition.
Yeah. What's your question though?
So my question is, like, at what point – you said earlier when we were talking about snow and sledding, like, oh, yeah, but you're active, right? And that's why you got sucked into it and you didn't notice anything. If you were passive, if you were just watching people sled, wouldn't be so much. And then I thought – so just as we were talking about sports, it's like, well, why do we like sports so much? Sports are competitions. They're like a simulated war almost, right? So what about real war? Like, has there ever been, and I would guarantee there has, a war where, like, you're not a soldier, you're not active in it, but, like, you go watch to see what happens. Like, oh, my God, the whatevers are happening, you know? And, like, the village watches. I guarantee that's happened.
Well, of course. I mean, that's why people – that's why UFC is still popular. It's contained war in a cage.
Yeah, I mean, they used to do that in the Coliseum, just faking it. And I'm thinking of the movie. What's the movie that's Brad Pitt's Achilles?
Troy.
Yeah, where like they go watch Hector.
Yeah,
go. Fight. You know, he calls out Hector, well, and here, everybody stands
so
and watches.
So you brought it in. So we've been talking about entertainment in the what I'd call, as you said, the traditional entertainment industry genre,
right?
And book genre, and then personal life genre. And I think we've missed a big one that most people probably wouldn't identify with and maybe even disagree with. I think a lot of elites, and this isn't politically, it could be Democrats, Republicans, whatever, mostly people with lots of money who make decisions that influence global geopolitical politics, I think their entertainment is
they're entertained by that.
Pushing things around the world, policies, shaping global control mechanisms, like the game of risk. But they're bored as the whole world.
Yeah. I mean, think about The Sims, that game.
Yeah.
Where you like, you know, you build a little town and you like make people do stuff.
Or think about the CIA. Yeah. Like their whole job, I mean, is doing espionage, setting things up for terrible things to occur over here, but hopefully to make good things happen over here. But I mean, it's a total game. It is a total, obviously they have to be entertained by their dark, deep cover machinations. You know, like we made this happen and nobody even knows it.
Yeah. And it's funny how like, no, you're not supposed to talk about that. You're not supposed to believe that. That's a conspiracy theory. Yeah. You're a conspiracy theorist. Yeah. You know, and I also think
figure out how the CIA operates.
Right.
Take them 2 hours and go read about how the CIA operates, and then think about every country in the world has that type of operation going on.
So what is it that's entertaining about stories, about entertainment?
To me, it cuts to that's how we're hardwired. That's one of the things that makes us different than other species is for whatever reason, we are wired in a way to transmit data and information in that story form that sticks with us and alters how we think, how we feel, how we act, how we interact, what we carry with us. And if you can fit something that you want people to believe in or do into the story form structure, the good and bad, the us versus them, like there's only about 7 common story structures. But, you know, chronology events, there's a good person, a hero, there's a bad person, there's a conflict, there's a climax. It sells. And not in like, go buy it. It just sticks with us. And so for whatever reason, our hardwiring, our brain is just, if you want something to stick, you want to be a good parent, you want to be a great coach, a good business leader, what a great entertainer, you better be able to put it in story form. If not, it ain't sticking.
And I think there's something that is really powerful and magical, and I'm going to posit this, and you tell me what you think. Everything that happens in the world fits into those 7 stories. Like, so we're, that's why we talked about wars. Mm-hmm. That's why we talked about sporting events. That's why we talked about power, you know, and the way that they enact policies to see what happens in the world. Because in all of those things, you could break those down and it would fit into a story structure where there would be – and it's interesting too, like from whose vantage point you are watching that occur, you assign the characters in the story. So anytime you go to a kid's sporting event, there are, you know, either 2 sidelines or at least on the same sideline split, parents rooting for one team, parents rooting for the other team, and they have assigned their own, you know, good guys. They've assigned their own bad guys. The outcome of the game is either a story of victory or of defeat, you know, and emotions are stirred.
Yeah.
In either instance.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that occurs retroactively, like especially with like the world theater, like as it's unfolding, it's complex and it's gray. But that's why conspiracy theories are so popular, because it's an oversimplification of very difficult, complex, emerging adaptive systems where you can't actually predict what's going to happen or how it's going to happen. But you can be influential or persuasive if you can put it in story form as if you have certainty for how it's going to occur. And then it can actually shift systems and networks in the direction that you want it to go. That's why, like with the CIA, and we talked about a long time ago, the ability to, in this our current environment, misinformation, disinformation, who has the ability to censor what's out there? Man, it's information wars. It's all just games about ideas. It's the idea warfare, and it's very real. But I'm sure to somebody trying to arrange that, it's entertainment for them.
So maybe it's not so much that the thing happening in the world fits the storyline as much as it's a storyline can be used
exactly
to fit anything that happens in the world.
As a form of structure to help us make sense of very difficult, complex, adaptive things that occur. That's exactly it.
And the same thing, the same event, can be used with 2 different storylines to make you feel different things. That's interesting.
Yeah, there's 2 books. If you want to understand, if you want to ruin every single movie you'll ever see, read the book Save the Cat. The guy's like, here's the 6 story structures that every single movie of all time and any movie ever created in the future, you can categorize them into this. Here's the exact flow and structure that they're going to follow. And it is, there's no getting around it. That's just how it is. And then there's another one, called like Expert Secrets, where he's just like, hey, here's kind of the main characters, here's the hero characters, and here's how you can vary them, and here's how you can use that to build your own persona and business. And it's Russell Brunson. It's interesting, but again, there's these deep structures operating below, and for whatever reason, our brain wants to seek them out because it gives us. It's a cure for our greatest disease, which is a constant need for certainty. And story structures give us that comfort and that warm blanket that I can make sense of it. It's okay. And I'm, guess what? I'm the hero too. I'm the good guy. And that's entertaining.
I just love that. Everybody's always the good guy. Their country, their people, themselves, they're always, no one's ever the bad guy other than the people on the other end.
I know. I realized that at a fairly young age, and I can remember saying that to my dad, being like, isn't it amazing that the good guys have won every war ever? Like, oh God, it's just because that's the way the story was told, man.
Yep.
What is it? Is it Zinn who says basically, like,
Howard Zinn?
You know, you can write the history from the loser's side, and it's quite a different story.
The people's history of the United States.
It's quite a different story.
Well, what else? I don't have any other big points. I'm good.
Well, I thought this was interesting. Yeah. So,
what do you got?
Talking about I talked about escapism as something
which
that,
I like. That's a key part of entertainment.
And there are other things like escapism that movies and stories can give us. And I thought these were good examples. So the first one, emotional catharsis, right? So I think of a movie – they gave the movie Titanic as an example of that. And they gave a quote, I figure life's a gift and I don't intend on wasting it, you know?
Old Jack Dawson.
And it's funny how like ironic that is, the way that story goes. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I think of a movie like Shawshank Redemption, you know what I mean? As a just cathartic, emotional movie that you leave feeling good. Obviously, there's the escapism. Another one, social bonding. And they give the example of Forrest Gump and how basically it's all about life's unpredictability and sharing experiences with others and forming meaningful connections, you know?
I'd make that same argument and talk about the Britney Spears book memoir that just came out. It's doing the exact same thing. That's why our wives care about it and reading it. The social bonding, connecting back to their younger self, connecting with the women today that used to like Britney Spears back then. So, like, I like what it's saying, but I can see it apply much beyond movies.
No, that makes total sense. Yeah. Another one, stimulation of thought. And they give the example of the movie The Matrix, right?
Well, and that's kind of what I'm talking about with the hold on loosely. Like, I want to be entertained, but I always want to have a 2-5% of my brain power reserved for, ooh, this is, how could I use this? What could I do with this? How could I take this idea and bring it into my life or my kid's life and turn it? So that's a great example for me. I always want, even when I'm being entertained anywhere, I always want a minimal amount of brain power to be able to tack out of drool consumption of the idea, how can I use this consumption idea in my life?
I like that. And even when I'm not doing that and being like, well, how can I use this? There's something that's driving, that's cathartic about the new in the novel, about a realization that I had never had before.
Yeah, to me, that and I'm always seeking the originality piece. What we were talking about prior to starting this podcast, like, I'll take originality over most other things.
Two more: fear of confrontation. Man, that's a good one,
especially around Halloween.
Especially around Halloween, they used A Quiet Place. I think of one of my favorite scary. I guess it'd be called a thriller, but I'd call it a scary movie. Is Cape Fear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because just putting yourself in Nick Nolte's position in that movie, you want to talk about a fear confrontation, right?
I'm surprised they haven't remade that.
Oh, such a good movie. I'm going to go watch that movie, as a matter of fact.
Counselor.
Oh, Robert De Niro is so good.
This is my favorite character of his.
Yep. And then Persuasion and Influence, and they use the movie To Kill a Mockingbird. And they talk about exercising, you know, standing firm in your beliefs, no matter what other people say.
Watch 12 Angry Men if you want, about firm in your beliefs and persuasiveness, being the one person that wants to go a different way on a jury. Ooh. And then having to persuade 11 other people to see your view. That just happened to one of our friends, Adrian Glass. He was on a murder trial, and he was the one person that was just like, I think we should go this direction. And he eventually flipped all the other 11.
Man, that's cool. Yeah. What a cool story. What a cool story.
But it was in the moment, he wasn't feeling entertained or being an entertainer. He felt under attack and stress. But once it was over and the outcome went his way, now it's like, it was like my greatest moment in my life. And so the way he tells this story, it's extremely entertaining. It's fantastic. That's interesting. We can take horrible spots or parts of our life and turn it into entertainment for others after the fact. We're really good at that as humans.
Man, it's so true. Like, and maybe that's a way to think about living life, right? Is like, when I tell the story of my life, is this going to be an entertaining story or is this going to be boring? You know what I mean? Like, what about you? Tell me about your life. Well, I was an accountant and, I did fairly well. We lived in a middle class, home and we raised two children and put them through school. And, it was really amazing. It was a really great, amazing life. Yeah. People are like, okay. Yeah. Versus having stories. You know what I mean? And there's something to be said though about, like what you said in the moment, Adrian didn't feel entertained.
No, the opposite.
He felt attacked. He felt stressed and it's
isolated.
Like, so there's something to be said about, turmoil that makes a good story. Right? Does it not?
Well, yeah, the conflict piece is the key element. You can't have a story where either no one changes. You know, that's the funny thing about Seinfeld. That's why that was funny. A story about nothing. Right. Right? Or where there's no climate, like where the main character doesn't do any changing. You can't have that. Or they don't face any adversity. What's the point
there? It's not a story.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and I found $5.
Yeah. Right. So. I guess that could be a change challenge of mine is to think about as you go through the next week or whatever time frame you want to make it, think about the stories that you're going to get from this time, right? And now I'm not saying go out and live a crazy life so that you have crazy good stories, you know, but most of these things that we're talking about, right, like most of these – the most exciting stories, they happen during times of – difficulty, times of struggle, times of danger, times of fear.
Think about a funeral. Like, what stories get shared? There's only two types. Great times, tough times that we made it through together. That's it.
That's right.
That's right. So I like that. I like that change challenge.
All right.
Any other points before I summarize?
Yeah, it's Halloween time-ish. Go watch Cape Fear. It's a good one.
Ooh, good. There you go. There's two change challenges from Dave. Think about stories you can create, especially when you face adversity, and how you can shape that into an interesting story, and then watch Cape Fear. Dress up like Robert De Niro from Cape Fear. Or Uncle Leo from Seinfeld, they do an episode where he looks like Robert De Niro from Cape Fear, from stealing books from Brentano's.
That's so good.
Hello, Jerry.
That's so good.
Entertainment. So we've talked about the difference between entertainment, entertaining, being an entertainer. We talked about the entertainment industry. We've talked about different forms of entertainment and how it's evolved over the years. But at its core, it's about storytelling. It's about emotional creation, emotional... burying an emotion with you to stick with you throughout your life. We've talked about how it can be both consumption and a bit of production to some degree for different types of folks. But that sometimes when we're in the moment of what can become a very entertaining story, we don't feel that. We're not thinking about it. But then we use those stories, those wrappers, story wrappers, and we can wrap it in that story to make it become entertainment for others, for the future, for our family, for friends, for society at large. And so I don't have too much to add in terms of Dave's two change challenges. I think that's fun. I would just echo what he said. Like, when you go through adversity, you experience speed bumps, conflicts, literally just remind yourself, someday this is going to be a good story.
This is going to be a hell of a
story. It's going to entertain somebody. And it's not going to entertain me right now, but it's going to entertain somebody. But you got to write it down. If you don't, you're going to forget it.
That's right.
As we like to say at Life Lab, experiment with life.